previously.tv podcast network.
Mommy, don't get mad.
What is it? What did you do?
I told you not to get mad.
Which is the quickest way to make me mad?
Okay, let me start again.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 189 for the week of January 29th, 2018. I am socially supportive Anne Hathaway, David T. Cole, and I'm here with motivational study spritzer Sarah D. Bunting, beanstalk climber Tara Ariano,
he's tall,
and movie theater snack smuggler Kim Reed.
Chomp chomp. Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us to talk about One Day at a Time is Kim Reed. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hi, yay! Kim.
So season two dropped on Friday. Dave and I watched the entire thing in one sitting.
Oh, boy.
We had huge dents in the couch. I normally would start with our guest, but since this is so outside of what I thought Dave would ask, like, we watched the first three or so, and then I was like, I will just keep watching this, like, so just tell me when you want to bail. And he's like, no, it's good. Dave, you didn't watch season one except for the finale, which I made you watch while I cried. Right. What did you think of season two?
I thought the show was really good. I was actually genuinely struck about how well they managed the balance between having something that was identifiably a sitcom and having something that felt genuine. And, you know, you have shows on the air that try to nail being genuine, you know, something maybe like This Is Us or something like that. But by virtue of having a show that is both at times silly and heartfelt, and just how they sort of managed to nail that mix, being able to fluidly go in between the two, I was very impressed with. I thought it was very effective. You know, had moments that were very silly, and they had moments that were extremely touching, and they did both well, and they managed to blend both well, which is no small feat, I think, for a show, but this did it really well. I was very impressed.
And I'll go to Sarah, our sitcom non-watcher. This is very much not your thing normally, so what was your response to season two?
It's not my thing. I did not find that they got that blend quite right for me. I liked it, but after a few episodes, I was like, I'm all set. Like, I think it does what it does really well. There were some times that I giggled. There were some times that I sniffled. I watched the season one finale just to get situated. And that was really well done, but there was also like extremely sitcom-y timing, just waiting for the laughs, waiting for the, oh, like it just was like, that stuff is not for me. So I get it, but it's just not for me. I was a little disappointed. I thought I would like it more.
Kim, you did watch season one. How do you feel season two built on what was set up with the first season?
Well, I really liked the development of a lot of the relationships. It wasn't just a retread. You know, it did show development. Especially, I loved what they've done with Alex, which is the son, who is kind of a non-entity in the first season. Like, he was there.
Yeah.
He played sports. I didn't really, you know, have much thought, anything to think about him. And this season, the actor's a little older. And so they sort of turned him into this kind of, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, he's kind of a ladies' man, or at least imagines himself to be one. And the development of his relationship with his grandmother, where it was one of the highlights of the season for me, just how much they get each other. And how much she clearly favors him, which was funny because grandmas do that. So I really liked that. I liked that they didn't just forget about the stuff that happened in the first season. You know, they did talk about their father who's been absent and who didn't have a good reaction in the first season to Elena's coming out. And they talked about, you know, Penelope had mental health issues last season that didn't go away magically. So I like that they built upon it. They didn't rehash everything from the first season, but they developed it. And I would say I thought it was this comparison came up in my mind when dealing with social issues. I agree with everything that Dave said about the blend and how it works pretty well. And I was thinking about the premiere episode this season of Will and Grace, where they went to the Oval. Grace was redecorating the Oval Office. Right. Isn't that what happened?
Uh-huh.
I feel like it was a fever dream. I'm not sure this actually happened.
So bad.
Yeah. And it tried to like say something about these times we live in or whatever. And it was so bad and not funny. And compare the way that this show handled, for example, immigration issues and the ways that things have changed in the past year and the fears that this family has and that they people they've known have had. And it was never I don't even think they said they never said Trump. You know, they I think they talked about like the current administration or something like that. But still got the point across and really let you. It didn't feel preachy. It just felt like this is if this were a real family, these are issues they would be concerned about. And so, of course, it's going to come up.
I would also say a course correction that I appreciated was getting rid of Penelope's two co-workers at the doctor's office.
Yes.
The male nurse who was like just around to be a sexist pig. He's in one episode, but that's it. Last year, I think he was in every episode or most of them. And the receptionist who was ditzy and drunk and hit on Schneider like she had nothing going on. So it was a good correction to ditch both of those. But I have a question for you, Kim, having watched season one. Did they ever talk about Schneider having been in rehab before? Because I feel like that was a new thing that came up this season.
He definitely was in recovery.
Okay.
I don't know if they specifically talked about him having been to rehab. I can't remember. But I definitely knew he was someone who was in recovery.
All right. I guess I just forgot that. I haven't watched it since it first dropped.
Yeah, I haven't.
Speaking about Schneider, the superficial Canadian character in American sitcoms continues in this show.
Yeah.
He's just like us, but he mentions healthcare once in a while. And then he does a crazy accent.
He had a cousin named Gordy. Like there was some details that I thought showed a deeper Canadian knowledge than the norm.
I don't think so.
It was like the Canadian knowledge of someone who grew up, you know, in upstate New York, like I did, you know, like a little more than someone who grew up somewhere else, but not much.
When's the last time there was a Canadian character on American TV that wasn't a 30-year-old white dude?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, he's a fine character. I just like he's Canadian. Here comes the greatest hits. He loves healthcare. It's like he's going to mention guns and I don't know the gourd thing. That's pretty on the nose, I thought too. But
I don't know if that's something that Americans know.
You think so? I don't know. Simpsons.
I guess.
I mean, I'd be interested to see if there's any Canadians in the writer's room. There usually are. There's usually just one stealthy Canadian.
And on the screen, usually.
Passing, just like Schneider, until we find out he's Canadian in episode 5 of season 1.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back to something Sarah said, because I, too, usually recoil at the laugh track, the sweetened laugh track kind of thing in a sitcom. And I think, you know, the rise of the... you know, the single cam sitcom, you know, your Arrested Development type of show has been a welcome development. That said, for some reason in this show, and I think it's because it's like such a personal family show, it kind of works, or at least is, I can forgive it a bit. You know, it's sort of like the equivalent of an invitation into their home, which I think works with the general vibe of the show. So I just wanted to put that out there. It's like, I usually like on, if Sarah passed me that note across the table and I hadn't seen the show, I'd be like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, I can say it is a live studio audience. I have seen pictures. I mean, I'm sure it is also sweetened, but it's that they do play it in front of a real audience. And I think one of the big pluses of the show is that Rita Moreno, she will play to the crowd.
Yeah,
and I love it. Like, she is clearly a stage actress, and she's like really more in her element than any of the others, I think, on that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's, sorry, I just want to say that I do really enjoy that character. She's obviously a lot of fun when they want to use her that way. But let's be honest, she's definitely on the rapping grandma spectrum.
For sure.
Okay. I think that, yes. I love her. I think she is she's my favorite character on the show. And I think they get away with it a little bit because they admit that the character is very dramatic, you know? So when she does this kind of over the top stuff, it's like, well, that's the character, you know? The only drawback I had in terms of the traditional sitcom stuff, which I'm usually not a huge fan of your Big Bang theories, et cetera, for that reason, is I think that Isabella Gomez, who plays Elena, is a great dramatic actress, especially considering I looked up her IMDb and she does not have a ton of experience. And she's had to really pull a heavy load. But sometimes her comedy feels a little TGIF to me. Like it wouldn't be out of place on a Disney, you know, sitcom, tween sitcom.
She's so
it
Elena.
It feels a little hammy and over the top.
I agree
to
with
me.
That.
It pulls me out of the show a little bit. And she's the only character I have that issue with. Everybody else, I think, has found the line. And it could just be she's new to acting. She's new to television. She hasn't quite found the balance yet. So I don't want to, you know, say, oh, she's terrible.
Also could be those glasses.
And she's got a big mouth. Like she's got kind of a cartoony face. She's beautiful, but she's got kind of a cartoony face. Mm-hmm. And that could be part of it, too. The big mouth and the big eyes. And
well, there's a little plot element in the first episode or one of the first episodes that she looks like Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
And she really does. She's got Anne Hathaway's giant mouth for sure. Yeah.
Sarah, I know that Justina Machado has bugged you circa 6 feet under. Leaving aside your feelings about the show as a whole, how did she work for you as its lead?
I actually really liked her. I feel like she's been looking for her like peg, and she was always cast as dramatic, you know, in dramas or procedurals, and I think she has found her true lane. I think she's perfect in this role. I was happy for her that she found this lane. Like she has certain throwaway deliveries that the structure of the show, which as I said, is not for me necessarily. She kind of has to like make sure that everyone gets every line, but she does have certain throwaway deliveries, like the running gag about how she shaved one leg. That like she's going into the kitchen and she's like, coming for you next time, lefty, like sort of over her shoulder. And like people laughed at it, but I was like, like that's something that I would say. Mm-hmm. And I just found her just more relatable. And also because she is a straight man a lot of the time in this environment, and she's great at it. That's harder than it's usually given credit for to be. So yeah, she's great. And I also like I like Alex. Like there's something about his delivery that's like very matter of fact and sugar free and not hammy that I like. He can sort of cut the schmaltz a little in his scenes. Like if, you know, if my husband gets obsessed with this and starts binge watching it, I'm not going to like leave the room. It's not annoying. I'm just like, okay, I get the idea and I'm good. Yeah. I wanted to like it more than I did. It is likable, but those sitcom elements, you know how I do. And I don't do those.
What in 6 Feet Under, was she the wife of what's his nut?
Yeah, she was Rico's wife.
Rico, right. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she also had an arc on Jane the Virgin as the sometime date. She was like Rogelio's girlfriend for a while, and then she gets pregnant with his baby, and it's, you know, all very telenovela. But that was pre the first season of One Day at a Time, so it was good for her to like sort of get a test run on that show, showing off her comedy chops. And also the creator of this show, Gloria Collette Calderon, has acted on that show as well. So there's a lot of crossover between the two. Judy Reyes as well has recurred on Jane the Virgin. So it's I won't say it's the farm team for One Day at a Time, but there's definitely a lot of cross-pollination between the two shows.
Well, I was just going to ask if at any point, if there's like a spoiler thing, because I want to talk about the finale at some point, if you have that on your list, Tara.
Well, it all dropped already. Like, it's not like we were watching screeners,
okay.
You know.
So I can just talk about it?
What I don't know. Dave, what do you think? Judgment call.
That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So in the finale, Rita Moreno's character gets very sick and they kind of made it out like she was going to die. And I literally was ready to quit the show. I'm like, if she dies, I'm not going to watch the show anymore. I was extremely upset the whole time. It was a great dramatic showcase for all of the actors and their relationships with her. Mm-hmm. But the whole time I couldn't even focus on that, because the whole time I'm thinking, they're not going to kill her off. I mean, Rita Moreno's up there in years. Maybe she doesn't want to do, you know, work like this anymore, which is ridiculous because she's like mm-hmm. got more energy than I do. But I was really worried that they were going to kill her off, and they kind of had a fake out. But yeah, I probably wouldn't watch a show if she weren't on it. I don't think she is. I watched the show just for her.
That was not my favorite episode, I have to say. I felt like they were trying to recapture the emotional impact that the season one finale had, and it didn't work for me the same way. I'm sure it would be different for somebody who, you know, has held vigil for in a hospital to a very close loved one like that, which I fortunately, touch wood, have not. But to me, it was like, it worked the least. And by the time they got into the sort of like the ghost projection of like, no, my work here isn't done, I was like, all right. Like, I just felt like that was more of a reach than I necessarily.
I thought that was their, they were trying a little hard for capital S special television.
Yeah, I didn't.
There, it was a little bit of an overreach.
I didn't love the storyline. I just, again, on a meta level, I was like, is Rita Moreno leaving the show? Because that... I didn't care if the character died. I just want her to still be on the show. It was a ghost, whatever they have to do. I just want her on there. That's all.
I get it.
Also, you can't just like unhook and hook up lights as Schneider did for her all around her bed. You can't do that.
No.
It's a good way to get kicked out of the hospital.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Back to my question for you, Dave, since having watched season two, are you interested in going back to see what you missed in season one?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I'd watch season one. Yeah.
All right.
I really enjoyed it. This is like, you know, I'm usually with Sarah on the, you know, sitcom-y sitcom stuff. See, like, when you're watching King of Queens and I zone out and start fiddling on my phone, right?
It happens more than you think.
but I thought this was really strong. And I, you know, there are things that I personally would have pulled back on if I was making this show about my immigrant experience. but
to Hawaii.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Canadian in Hawaii. But overall, I thought it was very strong. And like I say, I really think they struck a great balance in between their comedy and sort of family dramatic moments. And that's not high drama. I mean, a little bit of it is, but you know, it's, you know, living in Trump's America kind of stuff.
Well, it has a point of view that arises organically from like the people who are telling these stories, like both on screen and off, which I think is what makes it different than, you know, a lot of sitcoms.
Also, don't go off your depression meds. It's a very, very good lesson to learn.
Yeah. Yep.
One which I think everybody's ever been on antidepressants has found out for themselves. But it's good advice from one day at a time.
Sarah had a question, so, Dave.
Dave, would your story, would your version of the story be called One Poke at a Time?
Oh, boo.
I'm vegetarian, so probably not.
So no? Okay.
No.
One lay at a time?
One lay at a time.
There we go.
One lay at a time.
That's better.
Yeah.
I'll fire myself. Don't get up.
No one wants to watch that show.
Okay, so I have one note for showrunners on television, which is that these shows have shown that you can tackle social issues and be funny at the same time. But all of the ones that are out there are ones that are created by people of color, like Black-ish and Grown-ish and the Gerard Carmichael Show and One Day at a Time.
Atlanta.
So, you know, white people, step up. You can do this. You don't just have to be about ridiculous premises and whatever. Like, you can talk about healthcare or talk about, you know, whatever. There's a billion things that you could talk about and have it come up organically and have it be funny and interesting and still, you know, raise awareness. And I think you should. So
I think the speechless guy is white. No,
maybe. I don't know. But I'm just saying more. Anyway. I would like to see more of it. And let's not put all the burden on the non-white showrunners out there. Not that there's a ton of them, but that's all. That's all. Just my rant for the week.
I think that's fair.
It It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop, the Tar Ariano station, because we're back on the train.
Hi. As I mentioned in previous podcasts.
Ticket, please. Nothing. I was doing train things. Choo-choo, all aboard. Tickets, please.
Are you done? I mean, you don't have to be. I don't have a ton to say about the show, but as
please conduct carts in the back with a little more dignity.
Hey, Dave, can you go sit in the quiet car for a second while I talk about the show? Thanks.
Who will fight me?
As mentioned in previous episodes,
forgiveness, please.
Oh my God, Dick!
What the fuck? What the actual fuck? What did I do to you?
I'm done.
No, you're not.
As mentioned in previous episodes of this podcast. Okay. Amazon Prime finally has an app on the Apple TV, which means that I'm finally getting around to all of the original shows that they apparently have. And, we already talked about Mrs. Maisel a few weeks ago. I started watching I Love Dick. And I'm lukewarm on it. I mean, I love Catherine Hahn. She's amazing. I don't watch Transparent, so I don't have a huge number of opinions about Jill Soloway, who created the show. But I like that Hahn is playing a character who, like, it seems like such a cop-out to say she's complicated, but she really is, like, in ways that in the first episode were extremely frustrating, and she doesn't really learn a lot of her lessons going forward, which is a fine thing for, you know, for circumstances for a protagonist to be in, male or female. But the main thing about this show that strikes me is, like, it's extraordinary that a really, like, intellectual novel like I Love Dick by Chris Krause, who is also the name of Hahn's character, would be adapted into a show by anybody. Like, I realize it's been canceled by Amazon and that's terrible, and ditto One Mississippi, although I didn't watch it, but people are sad about it and I get it. But, like, the benefit of the peak TV time, I know we all feel overwhelmed by how many shows there are, but, like, the fact that a show like this could get made, it would never happen at any other point in TV history. Like, it is so weird and arty and ambitious and strange and unique. Like, I'm excited to watch the rest of the first season. It's only 8 episodes. Just because it's so singular, like, there's something exciting about seeing something on TV that's like nothing at all you have ever seen attempted before. And the fact that it only got one season is a bummer, but the fact that it did get one season is incredible. Like, I don't know how this happened. I would love, and I'm sure it's coming, to read an oral history of, like, how this incredibly weird, esoteric pitch actually, like, was successful. So, that is my show for the week. And in terms of my plug, I will mention the Epic Old School Recaps. Sarah, of course, as we talked about on the Blotter Presents a couple weeks ago, is doing Epic Old School Recaps of American Crime Story, : the assassinated Gianni Versace. Mark is back with RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. And you can also, if I didn't mention it last week, subscribe to the podcast where both of them read their recaps to you so you don't even have to use your eyes to enjoy them. And more to come next month. Exciting.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I have had a picture of Chris Williams taped to the wall of my metaphorical bunk since 90210 put Deshaun in that Globetrotters rig for the calendar shoot. Sequin flag shorts. I am a patriot. Anyway, I've always really liked Chris Williams. Now it's really wrong. I've been glad to see him wherever he turns up, even when he's kind of a sketchball in Friday Night Lights or even in the oatmeal-y Close to Home, which, yes, that was a thing for like 2 years. I watched every episode. But the vulcanized rubber-armored Cress Williams of Black Lightning is the Cress Williams we need in these troubled times. the show does a lot of things sort of predictably. I'll get into that in a sec. It's not sort of all-time great TV at this point, but there's something extremely satisfying about it. Just, like, it's stylish. The beatdowns are super satisfying. He looks great. the soundtrack is costing me a fortune because I just keep Shazamming everything and buying it. I love that the one daughter, Anissa, is open relatively compared to like other times that this happens in the culture about what's happening to her with her, quote, anxiety attacks, and how psyched she is about it when she hurls a stick-up man across two aisles of Rite Aid, because who has not wanted to do that at Rite Aid? I could really do without the "I want you not to be who you are, even though I have known who you are all along" estranged like cop slash superhero wife thing. Could we not just once have it be that she's turned on by his superpowers and starts humming Electric Avenue and like ripping her clothes off every time he comes home from a rescue and is wearing him out wanting to do it instead of being all disapproval McFrownsies? At his Cress Williams wearing rubber tights and doing spin punches, it is a kung fu rave in his pants. Figure it out. I am not a crackpot. And the actor is better than
I
this.
Worry every time that phone rings, it's going to be the police telling me that you're not coming home.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that she's like, we can't be married if you're going to be Black Lightning. Like, what? Like, what? Have you seen him in the suit?
That suit is ridiculous.
How do you only have two kids? I mean, the suit is ridiculous. The goggles are ridiculous. Like, what are you, the 400 meter butterfly? But he carries it.
He does.
I mean, for what it is, he does. Are you going to tell him that the goggles are ridiculous? I'm not telling him shit.
I'm going to just tell you this much. The goggles, they do nothing for me.
They make me laugh. So they do something. I'm not really, I'm like the superhero stuff generally. Like there's so much of it. I can't keep track.
Oh God, there's so much of it.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like half.
How many shows does the CW now have that are like, there's like 20, I think now?
This is the fifth.
So and many.
Yeah, I really was not.
This is the fifth, and they have 5 nights of 2 hours of programming, so that's more than that's half of all of the shows.
And they're going to figure out ways to like bring Archie into the DC universe and stuff like that. So.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that God. I guess that's six, because that's another comic book one.
I was not prepared to give this much of a chance, even if it's Cress Williams, but this show has swagger. It's kind of dark and thoughtful, but not too self-serious about itself. The actor who does play the estranged wife, Christine Adams, is good, and you almost forget that she's this trope that I hate. The third episode just aired last night as you're listening to this, so you can catch up fast. And you should. And the next time it's a State of the Union, if you have the option to watch Black Lightning, you definitely should. It's a far better choice.
I'm too behind, but I liked the pilot a lot. And I hope it gets a bounce from Black Panther coming out, because I know people are super excited about that one too.
And I am super excited to see films. My plug is for Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, my music podcast with Mark Blankenship. Previously .TV contributors, Pam Ribbon and Joe Reed, have appeared on episode 86 and will appear on an Oscar song special in episode 91 in a few weeks.
Ooh.
Tara has also been on the show and sung the theme song in the past. True. So check it out. That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. And you can follow us on Twitter at TalkSongs.
You're not doing Big Mouth?
All right, I'm here today. Let's talk about a show that's been on for a while, but you know, peak TV slash holidays slash getting sick. Me and Tara finally caught up on the Netflix show Big Mouth, which is Nick Kroll and John Mulaney et al. A show about puberty, I guess. Tara?
Yes.
What were you expecting, and what did you get?
I think the reason that I kind of slept on it was that I was scared it was going to be super broad, and the first episode is. I mean, the first episode, it's like when we talked about Smilf. Like, it makes a big statement where it's like, take it or leave it. It's this. But it had enough laughs that I thought, well, let's watch a couple more. And it just gets really funny and sweet. Your relationship with the characters naturally deepens. That sounds gross because it's a show about preteens, but you know what I mean? Like, they get a lot of stuff right. And I was really charmed by the end. And I wasn't sure if Dave was going to want to continue watching it too, but he liked it also.
Yeah, no, it was pretty funny, kind of gross in points, you know, including the pillow. But even like the pillow has an arc. Like, I mean, I'm sure everybody who's going to watch it has watched it by now, but one of the characters has a sex pillow that mm-hmm. he makes himself, and then the sex pillow gets pregnant.
It comes to life, and it's voiced by Kristen Bell.
Yeah. Two things. One was I wanted to make sure to mention Maya Rudolph yes. as the female hormone. I can't remember her name. It's been so long since I watched the show, but she's like the female hormone monster. Mm-hmm. Is amazing.
Yeah, she's and really funny.
Also, the funniest thing that happened with the show, I tweeted about at the time. I teach, when I'm not recording podcasts, I teach at a 2-year college. And one day before class, one of my students was watching Big Mouth on his phone. It was right after it dropped. And I had like binged the whole thing over the weekend. And so I walked by and I was like, oh, you're watching Big Mouth. That's a good show. Like, just not thinking. Now, I teach mostly like 18 and 19 year old kids. They're kids, really. He was horrified that I even mentioned the show, that I knew it existed, that I knew sex was a thing, I think. Like, he, oh my God. It just never occurred to me, because I just thought, oh, TV. I watch TV. I like to talk about TV, you know? So I'm like, oh, Big Mouth, that's a good show. I watched over the weekend. And he was like, you watched this? And I was like, oh. I go, yeah, it's yeah, okay. This never happened, and I just walked away. Middle-aged white lady in connection with Big Mouth. He did not want to connect those two things, so it was funny.
Oh, a hormone monstrous. Yes.
No, but she has a name too. When they have that scene in the like conference room where they're being lawyers, they call each other names. I can't remember what they are either.
You're right. Yeah. The one thing they could lose is the Duke Ellington thing. That was like a one episode note.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But Jordan Peele is so funny. I mean, I can forgive a lot because his voice acting is pretty hilarious.
That music means it's time for the canon. Tara Ariano is submitting a proposal today. Take it away, Tara.
Okay, I'm here to talk about season 1, episode 6 of Call the Midwife. It's very Britishly untitled series 1 finale, not counting the Christmas special. For those who aren't already addicted to Alison Lohuff's coverage on previously.tv, and I will just add here, by the way, her epic old school recaps of season 7 will be coming in March when they air on PBS. Call the Midwife is the story of a community midwife practice in Poplar, a working class neighborhood in London's East End. As we begin, it's 1957, the very earliest days of socialized medicine in Britain, and a detachment of young female nurses and Church of England nuns, something I did not know there were before the show began, live together in Nanata's house, providing midwife services to local women. These range from regular prenatal care at a weekly clinic at a community center to home visits before and after delivery. And most women we see, particularly at this early stage in the series and in history, labor at home, with the local doctor and or hospital becoming part of the story only in extreme edge case emergencies. I have to be honest and say that even just describing the attentiveness and truly loving care and humanity that are baked into every episode is choking me up. It's a very emotional show. Of all the TV shows that have ever been, Call the Midwife is definitely among the top 5 most specifically targeted to my personal interests. From promoting single-payer hyper-local healthcare to portraying the bonds women form when they live in communities without men, #banman, to treating the female domestic experience as a worthy subject for artistic exploration, to sharply tailored mid-century fashion. Guys, even the midwives' uniforms are cute. But the series 1 finale is something truly exceptional, even in a generally excellent show, so let's talk about why. Number 1, it puts Jenny in her rightful place. The bottom. Jenny is our narrator, and as the real person on whose memoir the early seasons of the show are based, our putative protagonist. But Jenny, like so many TV protagonists before her, is kind of a boring drip. And the most hilarious thing about this very sweet, gentle show is that they kind of knew it and wrote historical Jenny out of the show after a few seasons, but continued to have Vanessa Redgrave as old Jenny narrating events that young Jenny was apparently nowhere near, because why the fuck not? Also a lesson to showrunners. If you didn't call your show Grey's Anatomy or Dawson's Creek, you could have ditched your dull and or irritating lead like Call the Midwife did. I mean, whatever, Jenny is fine, but her storyline in this episode is by far the weakest of the three. She had an affair with a married man, and now he's having feelings about it, as we hear in clip 1.
We were nothing but careful, Jenny. But we broke two hearts for the sake of saving one.
Shut up, man. No one needs your shit right now. Also, shut up, Jenny. Number two, it gives Judy Parfitt an appropriate showcase. Our four central nuns are all basically perfect in their very different ways. Wise Sister Julienne, brisk Sister Evangelina, sensitive Sister Bernadette. Sister Monica Joan, played by the stunning genius Judy Parfitt, has retired from work as a midwife but still lives with her sisters, mostly, to this point, providing comic relief with her senile misapprehensions and habit of stealing sweets. But in this episode, Sister Monica Joan is having a hard time. She's been sneaking out of Nanata's house in the middle of the night and wandering to the shore. When local constable Noakes brings her back, she slips on the stairs in her bare feet and hurts herself. And as Jenny and Sister Evangelina are cleaning her up, Sister Monica Joan drifts off to sleep and starts making a very alarming death rattle-ish noise. No one's sure how to handle this, as Sister Bernadette tells Dr. Turner in clip two.
How did you get out dressed like that?
We love Sister Monica Joan, Doctor. And we do the best we can for her. But it wouldn't be right to lock her in her room. Besides, the truth is, we don't know whether she has dementia or whether she's just willfully eccentric.
Eccentric, you say? The word people use to describe crazies when they're rich? Anyway, Dr. Turner says that if Sister Monica Joan has any family, her sisters at Nanata's house should reach out, because unlike us, he's not from the future and doesn't know that Judy Parfitt is going to live long enough to star in five more seasons and counting. Sister Bernadette says that Sister Monica Joan has been estranged from her family since she entered the sisterhood. Sister Monica Joan then bounces back from an infection in a fine mood, which turns out to be bad news when she uses her newly regained health to go shoplift a spoon from a street vendor. His fellows join him in a complaint to the police about what they say is a long history of theft, and the cops show up to search her room, and we hear a reaction in clip three.
Have you anything to say to the sergeant, sister?
Yes. Poo to you.
Sister Monica Joan is a G! However, they do find a bunch of stuff, mostly piddly junk that caught her eye because it was pretty or shiny. She still has to go to court, though. And in the meantime, to backtrack to point one about how useless Jenny is, she goes to Sister Monica Joan's room, upsets her and makes her cry, goes looking in a drawer for a handkerchief, finds a cache of jewelry, and jumps to the conclusion that Sister Monica Joan's thieving is more serious than anyone realized. Sidebar, nice room search, Poplar PD. Sister Monica Joan is too confused to understand what's going on, though when she does get to trial, she's spry enough to correct the judge on his use of the phrase prima facie and argue about Dr. Turner's assessment, meant to be compassionate, that she's not in her right mind. But that night she has a flash of lucidity and implores Sister Evangelina to call Mother Jesu about the jewels. Mother Jesu takes the stand and explains. The jewels were Sister Monica Joan's inheritance, given to the order in trust when she was otherwise penniless, having been cut off from her family over her decision to take holy orders, and returned to her after she fell as balm to an old wound, as Mother Jesu puts it. The belated grief Sister Monica Joan is feeling lately for her deceased mother. Clip four.
I am a nurse and a midwife. I will always seek to ease distress.
Sob. All charges are dropped, and we get a new piece of Sister Monica Joan's superhero origin story. She was so committed to service that she gave up everything for it. Parenthetically, I do wonder if this story came so early in the series because producers thought Judy Parfitt might die soon. She's 82 now and still kicking, and thank God. Number three, the other nurses are rad. Trixie, the raddest, tells Jenny not to dime out Sister Monica Joan over the jewels because she's awesome. If Trixie had found them, she would have had no ethical qualms about it at all, because Trixie is great and Jenny sucks. Number four, Chummy. Chummy is the best. Chummy slays this episode. The biggest pity of casting Miranda Hart to play Chummy, which is less of a mouthful to call her than Camilla Fortescue Cholamondeley Brown, is that it seems to have coincided with Miranda Hart getting way too famous to stay on the show. This episode comes just as Chummy, whose extreme poshness hasn't stopped her fitting in among her neighbors in Poplar, has started dating the aforementioned Constable Noakes. But now her even more posh mother, Lady Brown, is coming back to England from Madeira, and all the nurses seem to agree that it's because she wants to check out Chummy's new man, whom Chummy wrote about in her last letter. But as the visit draws nigh, Chummy seems equally embarrassed by the idea of her mother meeting Peter and of Peter meeting her mother. Clip five.
We'll have to bring your mum here.
Over my supine corpse. Tea in the best cups, with the nuns, and that's a lot.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not.
When you met my parents, we came through that.
Is the dog's paw better?
It gets under people's feet. It wasn't your fault.
Major's coming on Wednesday. We'll have to ask for time off, and you're working towards your promotion.
I want to meet your mother, Camilla. I love you, and I want her to know it.
You've never said that before.
Doesn't mean I haven't been thinking it.
Yeah. Chemi is convinced, but nothing can prepare her for the stress of the day. Clip six.
Take the sandwiches in and go and sit with Pete.
Is he here already?
Yes, I let him in.
How does he look?
Calmer than you.
I am completely calm.
And she's right. Chemi may have come from poshness, but she's no snob. Not so her mother. She's rude about the tinned salmon sandwiches, the weather and government in Madeira, and both Peter's profession and the sorts of people who cross his path. After tea, Lady Brown continues shitting on all of Chummy's choices, not just dating a cop or wearing artificial fabrics, but living in Poplar and working in public service. Chemi tries to explain in clip seven.
What pleasure does this give you?
You sent me to Rodine. Our motto was honour the worthy. When I deliver babies, that's what I do.
Whom exactly do you define as worthy, Camilla? Those people out there. That policeman downstairs. There's an entire dismantled empire needing its worthy honoured. Africa, Malaya, India's a nightmare. I'd sooner you were a missionary than lived like this and walked out with a man like that. Because at least our friends would comprehend it when we told them. You'd be a spinster, but you'd be doing good works. Wouldn't be wearing crimpline.
Given the little that we've seen of Lady Brown, it's not that shocking when Chummy's confidence immediately starts wilting under her attacks. On his way out, Peter lets her know he's been thinking of proposing, but in her fear, she stops him in clip eight.
I don't want you to say it at all.
Why?
Because you're making me feel uncomfortable.
Why?
Because I've hardly ever felt comfortable anywhere. And when I have, it's been with you. It's been the most extraordinary thing. I felt small and in my proper place and not at risk of breaking anything precious. But now all of a sudden I don't feel that anymore. I think it's best for both of us if we put a stop to this. Goodbye, Peter.
That Chemi's happiness with Peter has been due in part to his making her feel small tells us so much about her life to this point. The poor self-image she's internalized from her mother and how things have been right between Chemi and Peter because he knew how to love her despite the ways she had tried to protect herself. Eventually, Chemi ends up in the chapel with Jenny discussing Sister Monica Jones' new kleptomania, but of course they're both really talking about their own situations in clip nine.
I admire her. And she's lonely.
It's a lonely life. Or at least a peaceful one. Rules and all that. So many roads one doesn't have to go down.
Chemi, you aren't thinking of taking holy orders.
It has presented itself as a solution.
It wouldn't be a solution, it would be a hiding place. I came here to hide from a love affair. From my feelings for a man I couldn't have. And I haven't escaped anything at all.
Here. Magic hanky. May not work. Didn't work on me.
You can have Peter, Chemi. There's nothing and nobody standing in your way.
Yes, there is.
Like Fräulein Maria before her, Chemi thinks she can take orders and hide from her scary feelings and the world. But salvation comes in the form of the only patient this week, Kathy, an unmarried woman who snuck out of clinic hours when Jenny suggested that she might be a lot further along than she thinks. Jenny turns out to be wrong about that, fucking Jenny, because she's actually pregnant with triplets. Chami handles the deliveries on her own in a power outage that forces her to improvise by dragging her bike in so she can illuminate the delivery with its headlight. The experience convinces her once again of her own competence and the importance of the work she does. And having sacrificed her uniform to swaddle the third baby, she heads straight to the police station to get Peter back in Clipton.
I've decided it's time to be brave.
I see.
I hope so. Because underneath its raincoat, I am practically naked.
In the end, Chami realizes there are more important things than her mother's approval in clip 11.
What, Omota?
I've spoken to the bishop.
And St. Margaret's Westminster is still a possibility.
No, it isn't.
I've booked All Saints Church up the road.
But you can't.
It's nowhere near a suitable reception venue.
Mother, it's right next door to the parish hall. We're going to have the party there.
But Camilla...
And you needn't advise me about the catering.
I've asked the nuns to organise the buffet. Sandwiches and trifle.
In which case...
Will you at least let me take you to Norman Hartnell and buy you a wedding gown?
You can take me to Norman Hartnell and buy me a skirt suit.
Preferably crimpline.
As you wish. As long as it's white.
Sorry. No longer entitled.
The best part is how delighted Chummy is to relay this news. It seems she's caught a bit of Sister Monica Jones' no fuck giving attitude. And if the name Norman Hartnell is familiar, it's because he comes up in The Crown as a go-to gown designer for Princess Margaret and the Queen. Number five, Peter is worthy of Chummy. He tells her he fell for her when he saw her riding her bike at 6 a.m. looking wrecked. And after she dumps him, he spends a moment pining after her when she's in the same unkempt state. Peter, the show really only has three male series regulars, and they are all totally gaga about the women they love and sensible enough of their place in the ecosystem to stay in the background most of the time where they belong. This episode is admittedly low on boozy nurse hangouts and dishy gossip sessions, but it more than makes up for them with Sister Monica Jones' heartbreaking grief and confusion, and with Chummy's journey from prospective nun to gleeful out-of-wedlock sex haver. And yes, there's only one delivery, but three babies delivered by Bike Light. Call the Midwife is an incredible artistic achievement in that it can tell us the truth about the human experience and make us feel great about it, unlike basically every other medium vying for our attention right now. Please vote it into the canon or Chummy will have boned in vain.
I don't think that's true. I will begin. Okay. Tara has been saying that I should start watching this show for like years now. Apparently Tara wants me to sob myself completely dry so that I am a literal raisin. but I had not started on it yet. And I was charmed by it immediately. It reminded me of the late great Bletchley Circle with the fashions and the soundtrack. And, I always love, what is the actor's name again? Judy Parfitt, who also played Corday's mom.
Mark Green's mother, Alex's mother from ER.
Yes. And is always charming no matter what she's doing. I thought this plot was a bit of a snooze and I was relieved to hear that, that Jenny is like a snooze and it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
But, despite having no like real context for whether this is a particularly great episode or not, I wanted to know more about these characters. I wanted to keep watching. That is definitely one of my criteria for canons when it's a show that is new to me, is like, do I want to keep going and find out more? And I definitely do. The delivery of sorry, no longer entitled, when she's like trying not to laugh at her mother's face. And then her mother like is really trying and is like, well, what about this? What about that? She's like, no, no, no. Reminds me of planning my own wedding. Bless her heart. fine, you can buy booze. That's where I broke down. As you do. The ending was maybe a little neat, but it was adorable. And I would also like to say that their newborn casting is outstanding. Triplet number one was super cute. He's just like peering around his mom's boob like, so what's up, guys? Yeah, this was great.
But they actually look really small. They're not like usually when you see a TV baby and it's like 8 months old. Like yeah. They really do they look brand new, and like you can see clips online about how they cast them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's it's great. And this presentation was a delight. I'm not sure how Dave really feels about certain thrusts of the presentation, but I totally agree. And yeah, I can't wait to finally get caught up on, apparently there's like 28 seasons of this by now. Oh. That's okay. I'll make room. Kim.
Season 7 is the one that just started in the UK, and they're only 8 episodes plus a Christmas special. So they are short.
Okay.
I too know my place and stay in the background.
Thank you, Dave.
David. Kim, okay. What did you think?
So I watched this show. Unlike Sarah, I have, you know, kept up with the show. And I love it so much. And I, even though, you know, I was thinking about, okay, well, why do I love this show? Like, if someone asked me, should I watch Call the Midwife, and how would I explain yes? Because it's often so depressing. Like, like Tara said, they get into real life issues that, you know, about like when they did a whole arc on like thalidomide babies and, you know, there's a lot of poverty, obviously, in the area where Nanata's house is. And it can be so depressing, but there's just something uplifting. They don't give like fake positives, like everything's going to be okay because everything's not going to be okay. But there's this sort of maybe British attitude of, you know, we're just going to carry on and do the best that we can and help where we can and heal where we can, like that one nun said on the stand. And so maybe that's why it doesn't just like send you into a pit of depression about the reality of the world, because it doesn't. It's I feel good after I watch this show, even though it's often very sad. And it was kind of weird to go back and watch a season one episode because I haven't, you know, I watched them sort of as they've come out and I haven't gone back ever and rewatched. Like Trixie was very plain looking. She's much more glam now. Cynthia was still just a midwife, not a nun. And then, well, I don't want to spoil anyone, but she has a whole storyline. I liked what you said, Tara. I'm glad that you addressed the whole thing about Sister Monica Joan and what perhaps the writers were planning for her, because I was kind of like, yeah, she's still kicking around and she's like, you know, they don't let her like deliver babies or anything, but you know, she still does tasks around the house. And I was like, I feel like her dementia was written kind of inconsistently, but it may be that you're right, that they had initially planned this to be sort of the beginning of whatever. And then now 6 seasons later, she's still there. So they had to kind of hit the brakes on that. I don't know.
Yeah. And again, she's 82 now. Like she's doing amazing.
Yeah. I love that character so much. And as many people know, I recently did a rewatch of ER, and it never even occurred to me that she was Corday's mom until I like looked up her IMDb. Like that's how much she disappears into Sister Monica Joan, the character. Yeah. The habit probably helps. As for this particular episode being in the canon, I tend to like the episodes more that are a little more focused on social issues more than the ones about the nurses' personal lives or the nuns' personal lives. And I also like episodes with more medical stuff and childbirth. I feel like those are more representative of what the show is overall. I think it does both really well. But when I was watching this episode, I kept waiting for, you know, I love the ones where, you know, it's some sort of impossible. I mean, this did have an impossible delivery situation, but often there are multiple impossible delivery situations, or they'll have women coming into the clinic and, you know, something happens and goes wrong and they have to figure it out. And anyway, so I because it didn't have as much of that, I don't know if I consider it canon worthy or not. In terms of looking at it as representative or the best of the series as a whole, I don't know if I would consider this one the best episode, even though it is a good episode. It wasn't memorable to me when I was rewatching it. I wasn't like, oh, yeah, I remember all of this. I mean, I vaguely remembered the storylines, but it didn't have a huge impact on me in the way some of the episodes about social issues of the time or perhaps an interesting medical case might. So I'm a little up in the air about how I'm going to vote on this one.
All right,
Dave.
What is crimplin?
It's an artificial fabric like rayon or something. Oh, would have been okay. New at the time.
I see.
Crimplin.
I see. One thing they should have, that was very lucky for the character, but I would love to see the alternate take on the scene, is that if Chummy had one of those lights on her bike that only worked when you pedaled rather than a battery-powered light. So that she went up to deliver the baby, she sort of had to like cycle really hard for 20 seconds and then do a little biz and go back to the bike.
Sure.
So, Tara, I understand why you like this show. It is just one of many Tara's cry porn TV shows. This Is Us. This, I would say, One Day at a Time may also follow in into this
oh my
category.
God, This Is Us is total lady weep porn.
I'm getting sick of that show. This is a sidebar issue, but it's losing me. That's the porniest one. One Day at a Time and Call the Midwife, I feel like they earn their sentiment moments way more than This Is Us does. This Is Us is like cynical compared to these, in my opinion.
I quit.
That's a discussion for another time.
Yeah, agreed.
This show's not offering a lot for me. I don't really care about people giving birth. You know, am I ever going to do that? No.
Well, neither am I. But yes.
No, I just thought it was just, you know, fine. Okay. It didn't like stick with me like One Day at a Time did. Although I did, I was kind of like fascinated by the mechanics by which an elderly nun could shoplift so well. Like, is this like, they never really addressed that. Like, it's just some sort of like, well, you lose your mind, but what you lose in, you know, your mental facilities, you gain in stealthiness.
No one pays any attention to old ladies. Like, it's a known thing.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
and she wasn't very stealthy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. She would wrap something around her and then like stick it in her pocket. Like, she had like some, like, there seemed to be some intent there. Do you think it was like supposed to be she was just grabbing things she liked, like she was a squirrel grabbing nuts for winter?
Yes, it was like shiny objects, you know, she,
like,
when they were talking
about
this, it,
like, and then just stick it in her pocket.
I guess.
Yeah.
She just stuck it in her pocket really quick. I thought maybe it was just sort of like maybe some past, like, you know, before she's a nun, she was, you know, international con artist.
She traveled with a circus.
Yeah. And this was bubbling back up. But anyways, I thought that was interesting. You know, it was fine. But it didn't really, like, you know, rev my engine.
Well, it's
hot,
you know, yes, I think it's fair to say it's not for you.
I thought this was a democracy, but I guess this is some kind of dictatorship where people are forced to vote.
All right.
I love her.
I would like to put your saving of that clip into the canon of clips.
Okay.
I have no like context for this really, but I enjoyed it and wanted to watch more of it. And it also reminded me of Foyle's War. Yes, I'm the only one who watches that. So this is a yes for me.
Yay.
Kim Reid?
I think I'm going to vote no. Yes to this show, but not this episode. There are other episodes I would have voted yes, but not this one.
And I will vote no too, because boring. That means, unfortunately, Call the Midwife, Series 1, Episode 6, no title. You are not inducted into the Extra Hot Greek Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
That is true. Winner is Charmed, which is getting a remake, which just got picked up by the CW to a pilot. Jane the Virgin's Jenny Snyder-Ehrman is going to be producing. It's going to have a new feminist spin. This is from the press release. This fierce, funny feminist reboot of the original series centers on three sisters in a college town who discover they are witches. Between vanquishing supernatural demons, tearing down the patriarchy, and maintaining familial bonds, a witch's work is never done. Everyone should be happy about this. For some reason, Holly Marie Combs is really pissed. She was one of the stars of the original series and took to Twitter to say basically #NotMyCharmed and was kind of a coos about it. Shannon Doherty seems more open-minded, but
We'll see.
On the subject of the feminist reboot of Charm, Tara Aaron says, what a coos.
Well.
Okay, is that it? And loser of the week?
Loser of the week is SportsCenter and ESPN, which is having kind of a rough few months. Jemele Hill is sick of not being able to speak her mind on social media ever and has peaced out for the undefeated. Also,
anything to say about that, Tara?
No.
Okay, good. Phew.
Yeah. She, I think, is not a coos. If she is, she's our kind of coos. The fun shit-talking pinko kind.
Yeah,
I think our kind of coos is a sequel to A League of Their Own.
It is. It's set in a single hot tub in 1978. Yeah. Yes, I'd also like to say that I am a loser because I've been pronouncing her first name wrong for years now. Sorry about that, Jemele. I didn't know.
All right, speaking about things you didn't know, do you know what time it is?
No.
Coos time?
Oh.
That was an alternate title for Call the Midwife, by the way.
You walked her right to that, Dave.
Honestly.
You walked her right to it. No, no. It's not game
time. It's non-regulation game time. We concluded our game time season last week, and so as is our custom when we remember to do it, this is a non-regulation game time where Dave gets to play.
Yay!
This Yay. Game is called Don't Call It a Reboot. They've been here for I've years. Here this for, game yeah, was inspired by our lead topic this week and generally by the trend of TV series being brought back or, as I just read in that Charmed press release, rebooted. But as a tiresome pedant, I personally am bothered by the use of that word as a catch-all term that covers both remakes and revivals when those things are not the same. A remake takes an existing property and puts a new spin on it. For example, Freeform's Party of Five, which we discussed last week, which will have the same title and core premise of orphan kids, but will change the circumstances that left them on their own. A revival takes a show that ended and picks back up with the same characters you knew, played by the same actors with the same title, like with, as also just announced last week, Murphy Brown. TLDR, revival, same people, remake, new people. So the game is this. I'm going to give you the name of an actor. For 2 points, you tell me whether he or she is the star of a remake or a revival and the title of the show. If you need a hint, I'll give you the name of one of his or her co-stars, and then you can tell me the title of the show for 1 point. Notes before we start for clarity. Number one, these are titles in the TV world, so there's not going to be like Shelley Long for the Brady Bunch movie. That said, there are a couple of instances where there's also a feature film adaptation of the property in question, but no one from the film versions is going to be named here. Number two, the actors' names I give you are going to be stars of the shows, like people whose faces would be on the posters and stuff. Nothing obscure. Number three, also no gotchas in the form of properties that change titles in the adaptations, like the Munsters remake 1313 Mockingbird Lane or Fuller House. Titles are the same. Number four, spinoffs are a whole other thing. So nothing like Star Trek The Next Generation, nothing like The Bridge, where there are a bunch of versions in different countries. All are live action, no DuckTales. I don't consider it a revival if a show just got canceled on one channel and got picked up somewhere else like Nashville or took a million years off between seasons like Curb Your Enthusiasm. Even though there are a shitload of these things that have been announced but aren't necessarily happening yet, like the ones I mentioned as examples up top, all of the shows on this list aired, with one exception that's close enough to premiering for press on it to have started and for it to have been widely covered. And yes, even with all of those caveats, there are still 27 questions and a tiebreaker. Let's throw it to Picky to see who goes first. Oh, let's start with Kim. I don't have control of the board.
We will start with valued guest.
Okay. Yay.
So let's go north to south. Kim, then Sarah, then Dave. Someone is taking...
I am keeping score.
Keeping score? Okay. Kim.
Yes.
Alexis Bledel.
She was in a... Can you give me the two options again? I want to make sure I say the right one.
Remake, different people, revival, same people.
Okay. She was in a revival of Gilmore Girls.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yay.
That's correct for 2 points. Sarah, Lori Metcalf.
Lori Metcalf is in a revival of Roseanne.
Ding, 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 ding. 2 points. Oh, no. Dave got a hard one.
This game. Yeah. Thanks.
Dave, Tim Daly.
Tim Daly. E of Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be in a revival of Wings. I don't know.
Do you want a hint? I'll let you have a hint, but it won't help.
Sure.
Okay. Michael T. Williamson.
Nope.
The answer is The Fugitive.
Oh, yeah.
From the 90s or early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Why
right.
are they doing that? Right, oh, that's so bad. Okay.
Okay, back to Kim.
Yeah.
Lucas Till.
The name sounds familiar, but I don't know who that is, I don't think. So I'm going to ask for a hint.
George Eads.
I know who that dude is.
This might be where Dave knows what it is.
He's like generic looking dude number three, who was on like Seventh Heaven and... No, he was on CSI? Yeah, CSI. So it could be that, or it could be a remake where he's a new guy.
I'll tell you it's not CSI because that's a franchise
I'm
show.
I'm going to guess he is on... So for the one point, I have to say the show name. I don't remake, revival, doesn't matter. Okay.
Correct.
I'm going to guess... I'm trying to think of shows that I've heard are coming back. Magnum P.I.
Roseanne is the one that hasn't started airing yet. All of these other ones have already started airing. Dave, do you know the answer to this one?
Go ahead. It's MacGyver.
MacGyver.
I literally have blocked every thought or mention of the show out of my brain. I knew it was a show that had got revived, but I did not know anything else about it.
It's just like MacGyver, except now MacGyver's a big cock. CBS Thursdays.
Okay, to Sarah. Blair Underwood.
A remake of Ironsides?
Ding, ding. Correct for 2 points.
Wow. I was the only one who watched it. Thank you.
David T. Cole.
Yeah.
Peter Serafinowicz.
Peter Serafinowicz is in the reboot of The Tick.
No. Not reboot. Remake or revival. Remake, different people. Revival,
originally.
Same people.
All right. It is not a revival. It is a remake.
Of?
The Tick.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding. For 2 points. Good job. Back to Kim.
Yep.
Shamar Moore.
Okay. I know who that dude is. Because I used to watch Criminal Minds. And he left that to be on another show. It was a... remake of SWAT.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. Okay. Nice. Nice work.
Impressive.
Okay. Who's next? Sarah.
Yep.
Michelle Ryan.
Hint.
Miguel Ferrer.
What? I have no idea.
Bionic Woman.
Oh,
remember that thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is me.
Yep.
My body is ready.
Ew. Okay. Ew. Sorry, Dave. I mean,
Okay, to Dave, Wentworth Miller.
Oh, Wentworth Miller is in a revival of Prison Break.
That is correct.
Yeah, shit. Right.
Tie game, guys.
For 2 points. Okay. Next question, then we'll have a score break. To Kim, Katie Cassidy.
I do know who she is, but the only show I ever saw her in was neither a remake or a revival, or being remade or revived. And I don't remember the name of that show anyway. So I'm going to ask for a hint.
Michael Rady.
Yeah, that does not help. Think about shows that are on.
Kim is not ready to answer this question.
Boo. Katie Cassidy. was probably in something. She was in it. Oh, I don't have to say remake or revival. Just the name of the show.
Correct. You just say, the title.
Now my mind has... I don't know.
Come on, let's go, Kim.
I don't know. I said I don't know.
Okay.
Get off my back.
Melrose Place. So. Melrose Place is the correct answer. It was a revival, believe it or not. There were people from the original show that came back. I thought it was a remake. It was not. To Sarah, Minka Kelly, and I'll just remind you, movies are not a factor here.
Minka Kelly. I mean, what has she been in besides?
I'm like, has she been in anything other than just dating famous dudes?
Yeah, really, she's been on Derek Jeter. That's it.
Yeah.
Can I have a
she
hint?
She just broke up with Jesse Williams, kidding. From what I heard.
She rebooted Derek Jeter.
Sarah, did you ask for a hint?
Yes, I did.
Okay, Rachel Taylor is your hint.
Rachel Taylor?
Of Jessica Jones fame.
I think I might know it.
There's an extra bonus hint for you.
Oh, God. Friday Night Lights? I don't know.
Charlie's Angels.
Oh.
Oh, that's
right. That was one where there is a movie, but it's TV to TV. Okay, yeah. To Dave.
Yes.
Jordana Brewster.
Jordana Brewster.
Sorry.
Oh, sounds like
Kim
knows.
Wasn't she also rebooting Derek Jeter?
Yes, I think so.
I mean, she was in Fast and the Furious.
Who wasn't he?
Yep, that's her.
Way too thin.
Mm-hmm.
Something's wrong with her.
Way too thin on this show, too, in my opinion.
Yes.
I recall her being on something, but I can't remember, so I'll ask for a hint.
Jesse Metcalf.
Jesse Metcalf helps me absolutely 0%.
No so relation to Lori Metcalf.
So I'm just going to say, thanks to word association, this show's Punky Brewster.
Kim?
Yeah. Dallas.
Correct.
It was a revival because they had some of the same people.
Sure.
That's right, like Melrose Place. Okay, right. Score break.
All right. Your scores are the following. In third place is Kim with 4. In first place is me with 4. And in second place is Sarah with 4.
Oh, no! So what do we do? Do you guys want to all collaborate and see if you can double your scores?
Doesn't matter. So let's just skip it.
I don't think we need
it. All right. Skip it.
Equalizer. We're equalized.
All right. Here we go. Back to Kim.
Yeah.
Mary McDonnell.
Boom. Hmm. Okay. I think I'm getting her mixed up in my head with another actor. I'm going to... Can I have a hint?
Edward James Olmos.
Battlestar Galactica.
Correct for 1 point.
I was going to say that, and I wasn't... I was doubting myself.
Sarah. Anna Lynn McCord.
She was in a... Well, there were the same people, though. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm just going to say it was a revive-vake. All right, it was a revival of 90210.
Yep. Correct. Ding, ding, ding. Dave.
Yes.
Morena Baccarin.
Oh, this is a remake of The.
Correct for 2 points. Ding, ding. Good
nice.
Job.
Thank you.
Okay. To Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl Lee.
She was in a revival of Twin Peaks.
Correct. Ding, ding for 2 points.
I am Cheryl Lee.
Nobody doesn't like Cheryl Lee. Sorry.
Everybody doesn't like something.
Sarah DeBunting. Stuart Townsend.
Stuart Townsend? Hint.
Gabrielle Union.
That doesn't help. I feel like it should help. Doesn't help. I don't know. Benson.
Night Stalker. That other
Stop
thing that Chris Carter
that.
Did.
Night Stalker. Check it and see. Available on channel 103. Night Stalker. Night Stalker.
It's inevitable. Okay, David T. Cole.
Yes.
Andy Dick.
Andy Dick.
Yep.
Hint?
Wow.
This may actually help
took
you.
Took a turn.
Don Adams.
Sorry, can you say that again?
Don Adams.
Don Adams. All right. Don Adams was in it. Now I'm doubting who I know Don Adams is. So I'm going to say it's a revival of Get Smart.
Ding! Correct for 1 point.
Nice.
Good job, Dave.
All right.
Yeah.
I was like, Don Kim. Adams, that sounds like a fake name. I think I
know.
It. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that wasn't, he was in it at the same time as News Radio, and they both pilots went, and it was a thing where he like had to hope for one to get canceled so that he could be in News Radio. And it was.
I was thinking, has Andy Dick been on a non-reality show since News Radio? But it makes sense if it was at the same time.
I was like, they're rebooting yes. Dinner for Five? He was on that all the time. Oh,
to Kim.
Yeah.
Zachary Levi.
Okay. I know who that guy is. He was on Chuck. And also really good in Alias Grace, if anyone has not watched.
Yeah, he
that.
Was good.
Really good in mm-hmm. that. So what else was he in? Can I have a hint?
Jack Coleman.
Oh boy. What was the name of that show? With the superheroes. Oh my God. Give me one more second and I'll think. And it had Milo Ventimiglia and Adrian Pazdar. Can I just tell you everyone who was in it? It had that blonde girl who's on Nashville.
I'm definitely
now.
Convinced you know what it is, except for the title.
Yeah. Heroes.
Nice.
Correct. Ding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct for 1 point.
Oh.
Okay.
I would have been real mad.
Wasn't that called Heroes Reborn?
Yeah, but matters, whatever. But it's close enough.
Yeah. Like, okay.
It, much like 90210 was not the same as Beverly Hills 90210.
I wasn't campaigning for a loss of a point.
I understand. Yeah. Okay, Sarah.
Yeah.
Justin Bruning.
Hint.
Bruce Davison.
Don't know what any of that means.
Roswell? I don't know.
Knight Rider was a revival. Hasselhoff was in it. Okay. To David T. Cole.
Yes, that's me.
I feel good about your chances on this one.
All right.
Gillian Anderson.
Okay. So this is a right. This is a revival of the X-Files.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct for 2 points. Back to Kimberly Reed. Scott Kahn.
He's on a remake of Hawaii Five-0.
Ding, ding, for 2 points.
Go.
Good job.
Okay. Wasn't sure if it was a remake or a revival because I've never watched it.
I checked. I think everyone from the first one is too old to reprise their roles.
Yeah. Or dead. Sure.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Sarah, Elizabeth Gillies.
Elizabeth Gillies. Elizabeth Gillies. Hint.
Grant Show or Shao.
Do you know where Grant Shao's buried?
President and Mrs. Shao are entombed there. Shows are not being used twice, I take it. You didn't.
Correct.
Okay. This is a remake of Dynasty.
Correct for 1 point. Good job.
Well done. Welcome to the big show.
Get out.
To Dave, and then we'll have another score break. Our former plane mate, Maria Bello.
This is a remake of Prime Suspect.
Correct nice. For 2 points. Ding, ding. Score break.
Fedora.
All right, our scores are in third place with 7 points, Sarah D. Bunting. In second place with 10 points, Kimberly. In first place, David T. Cole with 11 points.
Oh, wow. Shit. All right, Sarah, are you ready?
Not really. Am
many points
you could tie
am
it
I
all up because we
how many points am I eligible
four, because it's double the number of points available on a question, so you could tie it up. Here we go. Classics, help me.
Yeah,
is that
classics.
What it is? CLC.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whose raccoon cap has three tails? Ralph Cramden's, Ed Norton's, or Morris Fink's?
Oh. Morris Fink. What?
Correct. Sitcoms. Who said on MASH, God forbid anything should be easy?
What?
Potter? Colonel Potter?
Hawkeye. Oh. Drama. What type of daytime programming was Procter & Gamble the leading sponsor of in TV's golden years?
Soap opera.
Correct.
And satanic symbol programming.
Of course. Kids and Games. What game show host is attired by Mr. Guy? Or was in the 90s? I don't think he...
Can you read that again, please?
Be. What game show host is attired by Mr. Guy? Kids and Games.
Well, it's not Alex Trebek, so I'm going to guess Bob Barker?
It is Alex Trebek. That's why I had to stop myself saying he isn't still.
Fucking Botany okay. 500.
Bye.
Yeah.
What is STR?
Stars.
Stars. What actress, I feel good about this one, Sarah. What actress needed 36 takes to give William Shatner one of TV's first interracial kisses?
God. Now her name has fled from my head. It's Uhura.
No!
Hold, please. Hold, please. Silence. Oh my God, Dave.
Shut up.
It's a hold music.
Dave, shut up. For real.
Hold music.
Oh my God. Why can't I think of her name? Holy shit. Do I have any questions left? I'm just going to stall. I'm going to keep stalling.
You have one after this.
I'm going to keep stalling. Mm-hmm. Stall it. No, I've totally lost it. What's her name?
Oh no.
Sarah.
Wait.
Yes.
Try to remember her famous fan dance. And it'll all come
Sarah
back
doesn't
to you.
Watch Futurama. It's Nichelle.
Of course.
Yeah, Nichelle Nichols.
Oh, sorry, Nichelle.
Is the answer.
Nensen.
Okay, final question. WC, what is that?
Wild
the
toilet.
Wild card.
Thank you, Kim.
I feel good about you. This one too, Sarah. What word starts program titles ending with again, are there, and bet your life? So blank bet your life.
You.
Ding, 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 ding. She did it.
God, barely.
We're all tied up, guys.
Thanks, Maurice Fink.
Final question.
Everybody has one question left?
You have one question left each.
Yikes. Is that me? Right. I'm down by one, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
10
Here
to 11 to 11.
Yeah. All right. Kim.
Yeah.
Justina Machado.
She is in a remake of One Day at a Time.
Ding, ding for 2 points. Good job.
Protest.
Sarah D. Bunting. Bobby Cannavale.
Oh God, Bobby Cannavale. Shit, I'm gonna kick myself when I ask for this hint, but hint.
Sarah Paulson.
What? Indeed. What the hell? Oh, I'm gonna be so mad. I don't know.
It's Cupid, and they remade it after the Piven version.
Oh.
Would you have accepted a revival of Will and Grace?
He's not opening credits cast. He wouldn't have been on a poster. So no, I would not.
Okay.
All right, Dave.
One to tie, two to win.
Okay, Grant Gustin.
Who? What the fuck?
You've seen this show.
You know
That's all
this.
I'll say. You have seen this show.
Well, I don't know who he is.
I don't
Grant
either.
Gustin. I tell you what he's doing. He's canoodling in the grave with Grant Shao as we speak.
Oh my God.
Rolling over each other in the grave.
Grant, I mean, I would watch that
hot
show.
Grant Gustin.
Or Shao.
All right. I guess I'm going to need a hint.
Jesse L. Martin.
Oh, Dave.
Jesse L. Martin. Okay, I know who he is. what the hell has he been in? It's a remake or a revival.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a franchise extension.
Mm-mm.
And then... all right, I'm going to say... he's got to be the leading character, right? Or the opening credits.
They are both opening credit cats, both of those people.
All right, I'm going to guess, and I'm totally unsure about this, but this is a remake of... The Flash?
Correct.
Nice.
So you are tied.
I had to remember that there was a Dawson's Creek Flash. I remember that at the last boat. Thanks, Dawson's Rap.
Okay, so you guys are tied now?
Me and Kim are tied.
All right. This is a shouter outer. I'm just going to say the name and give me, you don't have to say remake or revival. Just give me the title.
Okay, but this is, okay, got it.
And I'm going to say, I'm going to just as so game nervous. Master, because I wrote this thing, whoever gets this gets two steel meals.
Oh, boy. Oh. Okay.
And Dave, since you don't normally play, you could bequeath them as you see fit.
Ooh.
Oh, so here we go.
He does like to give out the Dave points.
Okay. Does he, though?
Yeah,
all right. I'm
points.
Ready. Good luck, Kim.
Okay, here we go.
Bad luck, Dave.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Deborah Messing.
Will Grace.
Dave wins.
Suck it, Reed. Suck it.
Oh, my God.
Dave. I'm going to blame the lag.
David.
Good game, Dave and Sarah. Thank you, Tara.
Yeah, it was just okay.
You're welcome.
That was fun. Thank you, Tara.
Thanks, guys.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. That was it. Our review of One Day at a Time, and we had a ball. We also went around the dial with stops at I Love Dick, The End of the F**k King World, Black Lightning, and Big Mouth. We didn't call the canon for Call the Midwife's sixth episode of its first season, but we did crown winners and losers of the week, and me, yours truly, was the winner of this week's non-regulation game time, but I am led to believe to understand that I now have two steel meals to dole out as I see fit, putting me in a very unneutral position moving forward that I love. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
poo to you,
Sarah D. Bunting,
coming for you next time, Lefty,
and Kim Reed.
This is it.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Sorry, Super Duper Bradley Cooper. I'm only a human woman.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.